This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Beersmith Podcast number 73. It's mid-January 2014. I'd like to say Happy New Year to everybody out there. For today's podcast, we have Stan Hieronymus coming on. Stan is going to talk about wheat beers, and I think you really enjoy that episode. A couple announcements for me. I did update all the Beersmith 2.2 videos, and Beersmith 2.2 is our latest version of Beersmith Desktop, available for Mac, PC, and Linux. And you can find it at beersmith.com, and all the videos have been updated to HD, and they're now running with much better audio. And you can watch all those video tutorials about Beersmith or learn more about Beersmith at beersmith.com/video. The second announcement is I now have a radio station running 24/7. It'll stream to your iPhone, your computer, your Android device, and you can find that at beersmith.com/radio. And I've got all 73 episodes of the podcast up now running at beersmith.com/radio 24 hours a day. So again, that's beersmith.com/radio. And finally, I'd like to mention our new sponsor, which is Critter Cutter at crittercutter.com. The Critter Cutter is a great tool here. I'm going to hold it up for the video here. It's a box cutter. It's a bottle opener. And it also will pry the tops off your bottle if you have to twist off bottles. It was featured recently in Popular Mechanics as a great gift under tech grads and dads. And you can find your own at crittercutter.com. Again, that's crittercutter.com. I'd like to thank them for sponsoring the show. Really appreciate their support. And now, without further ado, let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, my guest is Stan Hieronymus. He's the author of For the Love of Hops, as well as Brew Like a Monk, and he also runs a blog at appalachianbeer.com. He's appeared previously on this podcast discussing hops, as well as Belgian ale. Stan, it is great to have you back on the show. How are you doing?
Pretty good. A little chilly here in the Midwest, but otherwise great. Happy New Year to you as well.
Yeah, we're recording this a couple days early, but we're recording it during the big chill. I can't imagine how cold it is up there.
Not as cold as the upper Midwest. We only got to like 8 or 10 below. The wind chill quite a bit colder and a foot of snow. And that's it. It's like the coldest it's been in 25 years in St. Louis.
Fantastic. Well, again, it's great to have you on the show. And let's see, you chose to discuss Grodziski today, which is a style that I'm not all that familiar with. So I was wondering maybe if you could just start by talking a little bit about the history of the style.
The reason, you know, when you sent me a note about being on the show that I picked Grodziski, is in fact that Sam Adams in their long shot package, which is out in the spring, will have a beer called Gretzer, and that's the same as Grodziski. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to pull that out of there and say, "What the heck is this beer supposed to taste like? And why does it even exist?" It's a style that originated in Poland. The town of Grodzisk has had brewing for more than 500 years. This style became more prominent, more like in the 17th century, and became known worldwide. As of course, it was a smaller world then in the 19th and early 20th century, and then it totally went away. There was nobody brewing it in the 1990s.
So for how long?
Well,
how long?
It's barely come back a little bit commercially now. A few American breweries have made something along that style, but it essentially did not exist. It wasn't possible to taste a commercial example for more than 15 years.
Really? It's pretty amazing. And when did it start coming back?
So you well, said just the Polish home brewers have made an effort to revive the style, and that mm-hmm. started about 2005. And there's a contest every year in Grodzisk where the homebrewers make the beer. Their style guidelines are based upon what the beer tasted like in 1993, not necessarily what it tasted like in 1888 when it was probably different historically, or what it tasted like in 1940, because they can have workers at the brewery before it closed judge the beer. And in a sense, that gives them in what sometimes referred to as institutional memory. You know, you're making anything mm-hmm. up. They're actually saying, this is what the beer tasted like. And so that's what they're aiming for at that homebrew contest. A few years ago, a resident of Oklahoma who was involved with the Chalk Brewery, which is Krebs Brewing, which makes chalk beer in Oklahoma, he got involved with the Polish homebrewers, and Chalk ended up making what they called a Gretzer. They were able to get the same yeast that the Polish homebrewers are using as a base. Weiermann in Germany then made some oak smoke malt. And that's the key. The key things about this beer are it's a light beer. Traditionally about 3.2% by volume. So more like 2.6 by weight. But and it's 100% oak smoke malt. Oak smoke malt is much different than beechwood malt. It gives you an entirely different character.
Now, it uses some wheat in it, too, right?
It's 100% oak smoke wheat malt. So it's got wheat, low alcohol, and a pretty hefty amount of hops. That's one of the difficult things to determine historically. If you look back more than 100 years ago, the hop load is pretty high. But, of course, hops were not as well kept then. So they would have lost the alpha acids, and they certainly would have lost some of their essential oils, providing a little bit of the flavor. So the calculation, you can look and say, geez, these beers were hopped at maybe 40 IBU. You know, what what the Polish homebrewers are aiming for is more in the range of 22. And that's still, you can really notice the hops in a beer even at that level.
So tell us a little more about the style and the taste. And, you know, if I was to sample one, what would it taste like?
Well, the first thing you would start with if you were evaluating the beer is what it looks like. You think of a wheat beer, it's cloudy. It's not cloudy at all. So careful watering and during the fermentation and aging are essential. So you get a beer that looks like champagne and acts like champagne.
I assume it's an ale, right?
Yes. In the past, looking at the yeast and the way they were referred to before the brewery closed, there are two yeast strains in there. One flocks pretty fast and does much of the work, so it's going to be done in about 60 hours. The other is referred to as more powdery and finishes off the beer because it's a pretty well attenuated beer. Those are no longer available. I talked to a home brewer who not too long ago was able to culture yeast out from a 17-year-old bottle. So a bottle that was one of the last ones. And he said it did not make a pleasant beer. It was better to go with yeast. And this is yeast. They have a primary yeast, probably the flocking yeast, that has been preserved at least two or three universities in Poland. So the homebrewers and got this yeast. The yeast, in turn, Chalk used the yeast. And now it's banked at BSI in Colorado. So a brewery could go get the yeast to use it. Homebrewers is a little more difficult because BSI sells slats. So it would take a little bit more work. It's not a yeast flavor driven beer. So a German ale yeast works pretty well.
Or something that attenuates really clean
attenuation,
right?
And doesn't, you know, you don't want a Weiss beer yeast. That's for sure. You don't want any 4-vinyl glycol, which gives you the clovey flavors. You don't want any of the banana flavors. You don't want the isoamyl acetate as well. So you're just looking for a good, clean fermenting yeast. It's a beer that's about simplicity. It's got one malt. It's about, again, simplicity. It's got one hop. But the process is not particularly simple, and that begins with the mashing schedule, because you're going to do an acid rest at about 100.
Well, you're jumping ahead just a little
which are the complicated parts, which are the simple parts?
No, that's fine. Well, I understand the Brewers Association recently added the GABF style guidelines for this, and also that it's going to be part of the new BJCP style guide, which is expected out, I think, this year, right? Sometime before the homebrew
Gordon
conference?
Hopes to have the draft available to look at by the homebrew conference, but it would be at least another 6 months where you go through the testing process and getting them in, where people use them and things like that. And his hope is to take category 23 and include historic styles within that category. So Grodziski / Gretzer would be in there. Mm-hmm. Goza styles along those lines. The BA added it last year, and curiously, they published one set of guidelines and then changed those guidelines. The first set would have been much more like a beer from the end of the 19th century, at least one in a point in time, and was not related at all to what the Polish homebrewers are trying to do. What was curious is this came out after both a new brewer, which goes to the commercial brewers, and Zymergy, which goes to the homebrewers, ran Sean Scott's story about Grodziski. And had those style guidelines, which were a beer that's going to be less than 8 Plato, and theirs put it more like 12 Plato. So that they've got their guidelines more in line with the Polish homebrewers, just as the BJCP does.
Very cool. I understand there's some controversy over the name of the style.
I don't know if controversy is the right word, but the town is Grodzisk. It's in Poland at one, that's an area that's been overrun by a variety of other countries. And when the Germans came in, they, of course, I think the late 18th century and the 19th century, they renamed the town Gretz. This wasn't the only place this happened. For instance, in the Czech Republic, they renamed Jatek Saaz. Now we use the Saaz hops, although generally we do refer to the town as Jatek. So, and then Grodzisk got its name back after being called Gretz, until the beginning of World War II, the German town again. These are not pleasant memories for the Polish. It indicates, because the Germans, they ruled that you couldn't speak Polish. Being occupied was very unpleasant, but the style was popular, and so it wasn't just the beer from there. The beer wasn't only made in Grodzisk; it was also made in parts of Germany, and there they called it Gretzer. So, realistically, to use both names is fine, but it's nice to put Grodzisky first, and generally, since I talk mostly to Polish homebrewers. That's the term I like to use. And I have a Grodziski t-shirt, as a matter of fact.
So what are some of the challenges when brewing a style that's historical like this? You mentioned, the 19th century version was probably quite a bit different than the 20th century version.
It's a funny thing how this got back on people's radar. I think it happens at one place and another, and eventually they come together. Michael Jackson wrote about the beer in his Beer Companion in the early 1990s, and he talked about, and I'll just read you what he wrote, as a matter of fact, but he was in Poland, and he said it's made in both a low alcohol and conventional strength being about 5% ABV. It has a sourish, sappy, oaky aroma, like a box that held smoked herring, and a smoky, very dry, crisp palate. After a period of storage, it begins to develop a tart, quenching acidity. Grodzisk is a smoke counterpoint to Berliner Weiss, or the old style of low-gravity wheat beer once made around Leuven, Belgium. Some people read that and they think that it's a sour beer. There's nothing historically to indicate that it was a sour beer. So if you were looking for commercial versions of this beer right now, you would struggle mightily. Mm-hmm. Six Point Brewery in Brooklyn this past summer made a one-off batch, which they call Gretzer. They used 100% oak smoke malt, that was hopped to 30 IBU, which is a higher level. They got yeast from Poland. So they worked pretty hard to make it like the original. And they bottled up, you know, I took one 22-ounce bottle with me to Poland when I was judging in their large homebrew competition and imported it out to homebrewers to make that beer. And, you know, as soon as they smelled that beer, they said, too much hops. You know, there was too much of the aroma to meet their style standard. So, you know, they're trying to recreate something, and they want this link that the brewery workers can judge. And that's right. The immediate. This isn't going to be a giant style in Poland among craft beer. You know, they're interested in the same things mm-hmm. as here. Hops are ruling right now. Different flavors are ruling right now.
So you say it's a hoppy beer, but you say it doesn't have an overwhelming aroma.
Well, the hop additions in the beer are basically, it would be a 2-hour boil. We can talk about that in a minute. But second hop addition is at 30 minutes. So almost all of your essential oils and things that add aroma and, to a certain extent, flavor.
So you don't pick up a lot of the aroma. Well, let's talk about actually brewing one. Let's start at the beginning. You mentioned a little bit about the hops, or I'm sorry, the grain bill.
Bill is 100% smoked wheat. And I will back up one second to finish. So we're talking about a commercial example. Fritz Breen, who B United brings his beers in. A lot of people like his Berliner Weiss, and he's done some other historic beers. He's a brewing professor and also does these beers under contract. His Grodzisk has a sour mash. Again, there's nothing in the literature. We can say that it might have had 40 BUs. It might have had 20 BUs. Sometimes it included a little bit of barley malt. But there's nothing to indicate that it was ever a sour mash. So he's trying to make a beer that has this sour element. He's also using beechwood smoked malt, and certainly all the historical records indicate that it was oak smoked. If somebody wants to tell the difference between beechwood and oak smoked, I'd recommend getting the Schlenkerlau beers. If you get their Märzen beer, that's beechwood smoked. If you get their, I think that their Pale Bock, which is like a Maibock, that's oak smoked, and you can immediately tell the difference, the character that those two things bring to it. So simply on the malt, all you're using is the oak smoked malt.
So where do you get oak smoked malt? I assume you probably have to make it yourself.
That's what people did before. You know, I read your description what Michael Jackson said about the beer. And then in 1997, he was at a symposium in Chicago with historic beers and ask Randy Mosher to see if he could make a Gretzer, which is a style that interested Randy. And I think he probably had made before. And Michael used that experience in the foreword to Randy's book, Radical Brewing. And he said, I had tasted the last commercially brewed Grodzisk. Randy had only read about the style. Despite this, he made a beer that tasted like the Grodzisk I enjoyed. Well, the beer that Randy made, he in fact did oak smoke his own malt, and went most of the same process, Saaz hops. But one thing that was entirely different, well, first of all, there was no sourness, which is whatever Michael referred to in 93. It's tasting at Randy's beer, because I was at that symposium, I tasted it. It was not sour, and it was hoppy. It was probably 42, 44 BUs. I think that's what it's aiming for. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It was an entire, you know, Michael talks about remembering one thing, and then it turns out to be a different thing. Now, Weyermann in Germany does make the oak smoke wheat malt, and it is sold in the United States. You know, if you can't get it at one homebrew shop, you should be able to find it at another. You are obviously, if you're buying that smoked wheat malt and using 100%, you're locked in to what the smoke level is going to be within the beer. If you decide you want a little bit less, then you could swap in, say, some Pilsner malt just to lighten the load a little bit.
So how do you go about smoking your own if you want to? What's the best way?
I would say either if you got a smoker, that's the best way to do it.
Put it in the smoker with some oak, right?
But you're not going to be doing it exactly the same way. The reason this had the oak smoke is that that was part of the drying process for the malt. If you go to Schlenkerlau today, the brew pub and brewery, they are doing their own malting and they're drying over smoke. When you do that at home, you're going to start out buying something malted and then smoke it. So it's still going to be a little different than you would be buying from Weyermann.
Right. Okay. So we've covered that. Let's talk for a minute about the mash schedule. You mentioned the mash schedule earlier, but, let's go into detail.
Another thing to take in consideration is the water. Water profile. The brewer who won the Sam Adams long shot contest learned about the beer reading about it in Zymergy. And he was interested for a variety of reasons, one of which is he was getting into water chemistry. And it, you know, worked to alter his water to be pretty much the same profile as Sobieski water. I don't think we'll try and recite that over the air, but it is available in Zymergy. And Grodzisk prided itself in the mineral content of its water overall as a drinking water. So that's something to take into account to look at what their water profile was and try and come relatively close to it. For the mash schedule, and I'm pretty sure Caesar Mahone, who won that contest, followed this. I know Randy did when he did his beer for Michael. And it starts with an acid rest at 100 degrees for about 30 minutes. Then you want to raise it to about 125 for a protein rest. And that could be from 30 to 60 minutes, depending upon what you like. And then raise it to the saccharification level of about 158 for 30 minutes. So it's a curious combination of keeping body and making sure that, for instance, you've got your protein rest in there, and then mash out at about 167.
And I assume the extra steps are probably needed because you're working with 100%
wheat. Yeah, that's certainly a large part of it, but you're also trying to get that the body that gives you that champagne-like character, and certainly the polls talk about that to begin with. What that beer looks like is very important. They're judging score sheets a little bit different than in the BJCP, where you're looking at three for appearance in the BJCP. On the Polish sheet, it's three for color and then six for foam. So and they don't have an overall.
Because it's interesting, you got a high attenuation beer, but yet you're still trying to retain the body for the foam and carbonation.
Right. And so, I've seen that beer poured, the homebrew versions, for instance, in I think it was a 3-liter bottle. And it was just that had a headstand that lasted forever. It's just beautiful lacing. And that's an important part of the beer, is what it looks like. And also thinking about the body, you're using low alpha hops. There are hops grown near Grodzisk, another Polish, I would butcher trying to say the name of those hops, and you can get them in the immediate region, but they are surely akin to the Sazertop hops. In Poland, that means and you can usually buy Lublin in the United States. Lublin is genetically the same as Saz, genetically the same as Spalter, and Tettnanger. Those hops are all the same at the root, but you're going to come closer with, say, the Lublin or the Saz, because they're at the same latitude. You start to drop down a little bit with Spalt, and then further south with Tettnanger. So they would be a little bit different.
Right, Lublin's from Poland.
That's a Polish hop.
If I recall, it's grown in Poland.
It's grown a little further east than Grodzisk.
And you mentioned a pretty simple hop schedule, right?
So you're going to be doing a 2-hour boil, The first edition, you know, in Randy's case, again, when he did it for Michael, he just threw, he did one edition at the outset, boom, done. But otherwise, generally about 15 minutes in, which means you're going to boil them for an hour or five. You know, if you drop down to 60, it's not going to make much difference. And then an addition with 30 minutes to go. So just those two additions. And if you want to aim for the Polish level, you're going to be going for about 22 BU. You could ramp it up a little bit higher. I wouldn't go to 40, but you could experiment and say, I want to go with 26 or 30 or 32 or somewhere in there.
And what's in the original gravity's
pretty low,
gravity? Right?
Original gravity in the range of 1030 to 1032. And you're just trying to get it down to finish at more. So it's not a super attenuating beer because you're probably going to finish at more like 06 to 07, somewhere in there.
Right. And you mentioned the hops. You said 20, 30. You said 30 IBU
for the Polish standard. And for, I think the BJCP, let me double check because I've got the draft on that. BJCP says you can go from 20 to 35. If you went above 24 in a Polish contest, you would probably be kicked.
But still pretty, pretty well, reasonable hop levels for a very light beer, right? Especially a wheat beer where you get to bring up a lot of that.
Yeah, you're going to notice that. And the other thing with those longer boils with aroma type hops is they have different polyphenols in them. So those polyphenols are going to add a different texture to the beer. So they're going to supplement the body of that beer and give you this spicy freshness. The home brewer who would like to make this beer commercially, and I have one of his t-shirts for his beer. He and his father brew together, In 2 or 3 years, he won this contest in Grodzisk as the best Grodziski. I brought a bottle of his beer back from Poland 2 years ago, brought it to NHC, and Randy had it, as a matter of fact. And at the time, he said that struck him as about the most refreshing low-gravity beer he'd ever had. You know, it's just got this unique combination of the smoke and the spiciness from the hops and the mouthfeel from the hop.
That sounds very drinkable.
And that's why it would seem to be a beer that would appeal to people right now. There's this move towards session beers. There's still this interest in hops, a little bit more interest in smoked beers, but people really don't want to be have smoked beers that are like single malt scotches. So
you mentioned yeast. And obviously you mentioned one of the strains, there was two strains originally, I guess one of them survives. But how do you go about finding a good yeast strain to use for this?
Well, you could contact BSI in Colorado and grow it up from slats, I guess.
Most home brewers don't do that though.
And otherwise I would say just the German, ale strain. I had at NHC this year, there were some people who, there was a Grodziski that I think won category 23. And I tasted a few others from home brewers just who were carrying them around on the floor. You wear a shirt that says Grodziski and people just come up to you and start giving you their beer. and they're lobbying white yeast to do it as, a seasonal yeast release, and white labs would be another possibility. As interest grows, it would be entirely possible that it could be one of those special packages.
Very cool. Well, is there anything special about fermentation or aging with this beer?
As I said, that it's going to be a pretty quick ferment, because it's going to zip through pretty fast. It's traditionally in the instructions, you're not going to spend a lot of time giving it any sort of secondary. I'll check that real quick. So the fermentation, by the end of the third day, you're going to have your apparent extract down pretty close to where you want it to be. At that point, you might transfer to a short secondary. In the case of the Polish brewers, that's a lot of times they're going to be adding isinglass then. So some sort of clarification, which of course you can also do at knockout, but you
probably pretty important if you want to clear wheat beer.
Well, right? You know, wheat beers will drop clear. But generally that's going to be in the bottle or in the keg. You know, I live in the land of, Boulevard wheat beer, and they work very hard to keep that beer cloudy in the marketplace. They have instructions on the bottle to tilt it up. But a keg, if a keg is, which is delivered upside down, sits for a few days, that the yeast is still going to drop out. So wheat beers aren't necessarily super cloudy, but you want a beer that's really clear. So some sort of clarification and a little bit of time to clarify it are an important part of the process and the aging part. Taking care of and lautering very well, you know, slowly and well, and getting it cleaned out that way is important. So it's very much of a process thing.
So you're probably going to use some isinglass, yes, or something like that. Do you use any clarifying agents when bottling, either you know, polychlor, clarifying, any of the other ones?
Traditionally, they have not, but that mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you couldn't. And then, you know, that it is it's a bottle-conditioned beer. You're better off saving your 500s from other German beers, because you want this. An important part of this beer is you want to be shooting for about 3.5 volumes. And so
right. So you need some strong
bottles. Heritage bottles, for instance, those little ones, like North Coast uses, I know those are, they're certified to 2.5 volumes. Of course, that's a myth.
But you don't want to use your leftover Bud Light bottles probably and try and prime it up to 3.5. Yeah, three and a half volumes.
Yeah, so you know, the Belgian beer, I mean, that's at the volume of a German Weiss beer or say a Belgian triple. Right. And so you want the thicker bottles. And the easiest one is just to use the 500s of save up your German Weiss beer bottles and other German bottles.
So that's carbonation. You do bottle condition it. Finishing, do you cold age it or cold crash it at some point or not?
Well, you know, there are different, everybody's got different theories on the best way to bottle condition. I think the Schneider approach, there are two parts when you're thinking about bottle conditioning, one of which you are kicking fermentation back up a little bit. So you want to be careful that you aren't introducing diacetyl. So you need to keep it warm enough, long enough to get rid of the diacetyl. But the way Schneider does it, therefore, they're doing 1 week a little bit warmer, and then 2 weeks back down into what would amount to be the 50s Fahrenheit. And it seems to me that way you get a little finer bubbles and carbonation that way.
So if I was going to sit down and judge the perfect Grodziski, what would it taste like? What would I be looking for?
According to style guidelines right now, and you're trying to do it like the Polish, or you're trying to do the 1888?
Well, right. I haven't tasted one before, so it's hard for me. You know, if I made one, if I sit down and make one, I wouldn't even know how to judge it. How would I know? Well, I got it right.
The first, I was last spring I was judging, and somebody comes up and as he's judging category 23 and hands me the beer and says, how should I judge this? Well, in category 23, you're thinking the way I would judge it is the beer in balance? Does it taste good? And that's really the starting place. In the terms of these style guidelines, you're looking for a beer that's light in alcohol. Like I said, you start by saying, what's it look like? You know, is it bright and clear and effervescent? How's the head stand? And then you're certainly looking for the smoke quality. And after that, it's the overall pleasant drinking experience. And trying to decide what the hopping levels are is not altogether easy.
Right. Are there any variations of the style?
Well, when over time, certainly you could say historically. So you could look at like the recipe that Randy used from the 1880s. That was over 12 Plato. So I think it was about 1057, as a matter of fact, and 42 BUs. Wow. So that's a much hoppier. But notice that both are up, both the original gravity and the hopping.
So about the same bitterness ratio. If you take the BU to GU ratio, there's probably about the same.
It's probably a little bit higher, but you certainly have that to support it. In the 90s, in Poland, you had a 12 Plato beer that was pale. That was one variety. You also had a, I think you had a, maybe a 14 that, you had a 14 that was pale, and you had a 14 that was darker, and that actually used some barley malt as well. So there were those variations, but the dominant one was this actually 7.9 Plato beer that is what they're trying to simulate today.
Well, Stan, is there anything else you'd like to add about this particular style, discussing this particular style? Or where can you go for more information, maybe? Because, this is fairly new to a lot of us. Well,
I'd say when if you get Zymergy, you'll find the basics in there. Yeah. And that's a pretty complete background. You can go.
Which issue is that?
November, December of 2012. Okay. And if you, and unfortunately I don't have this memorized, you go to the Polish homebrewers website, they've got a lot of background information on it. The way they judge their largest national contest, or the way they hold that contest, is they pick a few styles. Like last year was eight styles, and that's what you enter, and that's what's part of the contest. And this year, Grodziski will be back as one of the beers in the contest. So there'll be a lot more examples that way as well.
Well, if you send me the link, I can certainly put that in the show notes.
I will do that.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, I cut you off. Is there anything else you'd like to add, though?
About not particularly. It will certainly be interesting to see what Sam Adams, the beer they're calling Gretzer, tastes like. I didn't get an official explanation from them, but Caesar Mahone, who's the brewer, said that they can't do a 3-2 beer because of licensing issues. They have to do a stronger beer. So their version is going to be 4.4. And also coming back from Poland this summer and thinking about, who gets to decide what a historic style tastes like, and the role of the Polish homebrewers in this, and the Polish brewers. We traded a fair amount of exchanges either on Facebook or an email. And I asked them specifically about this, and they want to preserve something that people know. They would hate for somebody to come out commercially because the site of the brewery, the last brewery, there were multiple breweries in Grodzisk at one time, not surprisingly. At the beginning of the 20th century, there were probably 100,000 hectoliters just beers produced. That's not a boatload, but this, was the beginning of the 20th century, and it was sold a lot of places. And of course, beers were made in other locations as well. So there was this sense that this beer belongs in history. So how do you do that? And one way is to say, we can have the people judge it and make sure that particular part is not lost. Then you can go back and say, let's make a beer a little bit stronger. There are only a few small breweries in Poland right now that were started by homebrewers. Many homebrewers or entrepreneurs are making beer, microbrewed beer, but it's under contract at larger breweries. The first one, which only started selling beer, I think, less than 2 years ago, Artisan, has done, I think, two batches to grow just now. The first one was the basic lower alcohol level. The second one, a little higher alcohol level. So people can begin to experiment. And trading emails with the home brewer said he's thinking about maybe doing an imperial style, but an imperial style would be maybe 12 Plato, maybe 10 Plato. So still not a very big beer, not even a 1050 beer, but noticeably stronger than what's made now. So there'll continue to be those variations.
What have you been up to lately, Stan? Last time we talked, I think you were just finishing up the hop book, For the Love of Hops, of course, which is part of the four-part series put out by the Brewers Association.
I spent much of last year talking about hops, but there's also the ongoing interest in monastery brewing. And who knows the next 6 months how much time we're going to spend talking about Grodziski and Goza and other historic wheat styles. So every time you do a book, you accumulate a little more baggage, which is okay, but it does take time from researching whatever the next book might be. And you can ask, but I don't.
Are you working on another book?
Well, that's, you know, I've collected so many stories along the way. I'd like to write a book that's more stories and less technical. Mm-hmm. And so if I can figure out a way to do that, I think I will. But there are also a few, you know, I think somebody needs to do a complete pale lager book. And I sure hope I can find a volunteer before to do that before I step in and am silly enough to try.
You don't want to sign up?
I tend to over-research.
Yeah, you usually have a lot of good history in the books. Like a monk, very detailed. I mean, you even went to Belgium and visited the monasteries.
Right? Yeah, and now as we were talking before, you know, you've got it. In fact, they now have Trappist certification, the monastery in St. Joseph's in Spencer, Massachusetts, and they will be selling beer soon. Not a Trappist monastery, but a Benedictine monastery in Mount Angel, Oregon. Their brewing equipment is supposed to be delivered very soon. They're working on recipe formulation. They would hope to have beer maybe by the fall.
So would this be the seventh?
You've got, let's see, there are six in Belgium. And then
Königshaven, right?
Which had lost their certification, got it back. That made seven. Then you've got Austria.
That's in France, if I recall, right?
Austria,
I'm sorry.
So, yeah. And then another one in the Netherlands nine. So St. Joseph's will make 10 with ITA, International Trappist Association certification. Of course, the Mount Angel one is Benedictine. There isn't a whole lot of difference. They're raising the monks are going to be involved in every facet of the brewing. The monastery itself sits on a hill that overlooks hop yards throughout the Willamette Valley. So it's a great setting, and they own much of that land. So they will be able to use hops that grow on the land that they use. And not that long ago, those monks, one of the jobs they did was actually baling hops.
So any other projects you want to talk about, Stan? Or what's going on with your blog? I know you have a very active blog at AppalachianBeer.com.
Rather than just commenting willy-nilly about all the fun things going on in beer, on the idea of beer from a place. And even that, I think, confuses people. If you use the word beer terroir, you get in all kinds of trouble because nobody's figured out what wine terroir means, and they've been arguing about that forever. And we know specifically, we can say there are differences in hops from different regions and why. Or certainly you can look at the wild beers from Belgium and what makes them unique to their place. But I think when you go to Alaska and taste an Alaskan beer, that somehow tastes of Alaska. When you go to Wisconsin and drink Nuclearis beers that are only to that state, and so why is that? And I realize that sometimes gets a little touchy-feely, and there isn't quite as much science behind it. So it's I tread carefully.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you you coming on the show again, Stan. It's great to have you back.
Well, I'm. It's always a pleasure stopping in and talking about beer. Any place that people will listen to me talk about beer, I'll go talk.
Well, again, my guest this week was Stan Hieronymus. He's the author of For the Love of Hops, as well as the very famous book, Brew Like a Monk. He also runs a blog at AppalachianBeer.com. And he's appeared previously, twice, I think, before. Thank you, Stan. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, a big thank you goes out to Stan Hieronymus for appearing and talking about Grodziski, which is a great new beer style from Poland, for those of you who hadn't tried it. I'd like to wish you all a happy new year again. Remind you about our Beersmith 2.2 videos, which have all been updated at beersmith.com/video. Again, Beersmith Radio, which was launched just a few weeks ago as well at beersmith.com/radio. You can listen from virtually any streaming device. And finally, I'd like to again thank our sponsor, CritterCutter.com. You can pick up your own Critter Cutter, and I'm going to hold it up again for those of you on video. Your own Critter Cutter at CritterCutter.com. It's a great bottle opener. It's a great box cutter, and it's a great handy tool to have around the house. I've had mine for over a month, and I really do enjoy it. I'd like to thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great brewing week.